Thank you. Mr. Aubrey wanted to make a point, and then Crystal, I know you want to get in, and I also have a very specific question for you, so be ready. Yes, Mr. Aubrey, and then we'll come straight to you, Crystal. Promise.
So I think, yeah, and Cynthia, I'm going to be familiar as she is as well. Cynthia makes a few key points in this, and I think I want to refer back to that. So you asked what can people do, and the reality is when we go back to the stats, the research on just the local efforts reported that 4 in 5 people would fear retaliation if they reported corruption. Right. So let's start with that. So people's innate concept about it is if I did anything about it, it would generate some negative consequence for me or my family or my business. Right. So we're starting with that as a backdrop in perception. When you talk about laws and our obligation to international commitments or the generation of local laws and the substance of those laws, what's really important is also to understand where those laws are coming from. So we're now operating in the Caribbean in this world of moving goalposts that looks at blacklists and gray lists and all of these things. And we're tremendous pressure from the World Bank, IMF, OECD, and the European Union to address issues of money laundering and you know, other types of corruption, which are steeped in, they want their money and their tax money, and they don't want it to go offshore. And so there's been a rash of past bills here in the Bahamas, across the Caribbean, that have specifically to do with, we need to have something on our books so that when they try and raid us or put us on a blacklist, they can say, nope, matter of fact, they've got something there. That type of a law does not really speak to the goal of what an anti-corruption law that's generated internal to a jurisdiction needs to accomplish. That law that's being generated that looks at and defines corruption in its local context, in a Caribbean context, in a Barbadian, in a Bahamian context, all of that has to generate from a core belief in that country that this issue is there. And I don't think from everything we've seen or talked about that it's there yet, right? Mm-hmm. So we have an integrity commission bill, which would have borrowed and looked at some of the things set up in Trinidad and other modern jurisdictions to set up an independent commission to receive claims and vet claims of corruption, and then have the capacity to work with an independent prosecutor to pursue those. That bill was passed in 2017 on the tail end of the incoming administration's promise that they would take on corruption. And the bill was actually pretty substantial. It has sat in Parliament with no movement since being read in 2017. And it tells you that the impetus is not there. And I would say that across governments, this is any established corruption legislation is going to be difficult for implementation, for people are holding new standards to their and they understand it, right? They know that culture is going to change, is going to be difficult, but it's got to in some ways come and generate from a different source, and that's the citizenry. So we do a lot of work in my organization on how do we start to actually hand the power back over to citizens on this. That concept of 4 in 5 persons feeling that if they report corruption would mean that even if a bill was passed and even if we signed on to all our international obligations, there would probably be little enforcement because someone in public office, even following Cynthia's points of taking away, many points of discretion through things like technology and systems that are automatic or transparent, would still have very little chance of being called out or reported or vetted. And that is important because we need to change that level to really start to make something meaningful. You need laws, you need structure, you need monitoring, but you also need the citizens to believe and mandate that this will happen. It also ensures that as happens in the Bahamas, one party goes out, it happens in the Bahamas and across the region, one party goes out, one party comes in, that there is a constant, and that constant is the citizenry, that they believe and want a certain standard. So we have to do work across the continuum, not only on the international side, on the legislative side, but also on citizen engagement and education. I think that's so critical.
Okay, thank you. Crystal, you are waiting patiently to come in here, and I do have a very specific question to ask you, but please join in as you wish to at this point.
Yes, I just wanted to emphasize that this discussion today is supposed to be about integrity mechanisms. And it's unfortunate that Barbados is stuck at the point which is technically supposed to be the easier mechanism in terms of the fight of corruption, which is to have the legislation in place. And having this fight after 2 years later, because I do remember in August 2018 reviewing the Integrity in Public Life Bill along with over 15 other groups, special interest groups, that would have made contributions to this bill, including the Barbados Bar Association, the Institute of Chartered Accountants of Barbados, Integrity Group Barbados, C2SAB, the Financial Intelligence Unit, and so many other groups that would have contributed their intellectual expertise to be able to give the best bill that we could have had. It is unfortunate that 2 years later that we are still stuck at what is the easiest mechanism to put in place. That being said, regardless of whether the legislation is put in place, there are many things that we need to start working on so that we can take a serious stab at getting integrity and anti-corruption practices the norm in Barbados. And all of these mechanisms are very difficult. And if we wait until the legislation is passed, proclaimed, whatever the case may be, we are going to be in trouble, because if it's taken 2 years, over 2 years, to get to this point, not including the amount of time it would have taken from previous administrations, we are in trouble. Changing a cultural mindset is not easy. Training persons to recognize practices is not easy. Implementing the right experts who will be able to do these things, to do these investigations, to have the unit in place is not easy. So the fact that we are tripping up here is very concerning. And I want to also bring home the consequences of allowing these practices to continue, because we always look at the benefits that come out of corruption, which more often than not will be individualistic benefits. But there are a number of disadvantages, which I like to use examples. So let's say that we have a construction project, and the person who is bidding for this project, they use a bribe to be able to win this contract. This is ignoring the fact that they are likely not the best option to win this contract. And when you award persons who are not the best, you, number one, you ignore the potential to have more value added to the projects that you are engaging with in this mm-hmm. country, and you're also encouraging potentially mediocrity. And when you have mediocre products being put out there and being represented as what we are best capable of producing, you do not understand the effects when you then diminish your opportunity for foreign direct investments. Investors who are looking at these things and saying, why would they want to invest in a country when the projects that they engage in are so mediocre? We stymie the economic growth that we say and we claim is so important for us to be able to recover as a country when we engage with persons who may take shortcuts, who may shortchange the persons that they're engaging with when they're giving us these projects. And then we have the very damning effect that the persons who are actually qualified to do these jobs, to do these projects, are frustrated by a system where they are continuously overlooked by persons who are not as qualified. And then they take measures such as leaving the country and creating a brain drain when we could ill afford it. And then we are left back with only persons who can produce mediocre products. Is this the country that we want to have? Is this the long-term effect? Because once we start to go into that spiral, it is very difficult to then reverse these effects and then invite persons of quality and integrity to come and do business with us. And this long-term impact for short-term gain cannot continue if we want to say that we are being serious about tackling issues of corruption and lack of integrity.
Thank you so much for that. And you all are really making this difficult for me, because I have a set of things that I want to get to, but then you're raising some other very interesting things. One of the things that, and I did mention this to Ronnie last night, if we were really serious about corruption, why wouldn't this government, when it came in 2018, just proclaim the 2012 Act? And then we can do the usual thing that we do with legislation that exists. which is to amend it.
Correct. Right? 2 years so later, we could have been address. Having a conversation about amendment rather than implementation. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. Hey, and we had that discussion last night, Christina, and that is something that I guess only the government can answer. But if you go back to 2017, the before the former Attorney General at that time, well, now Attorney General, made the point of asking the former government, why is it not proclaiming the Prevention of Corruption Act? And so, you know, sometimes it's easy for us to forget. But, you know, the reality is and his questions were, what are you afraid of? You know, could it be that you have to declare your assets? Could it be that it requires political parties to talk about financial contributions? All of these things. And then, you know, with a certain comic or comedic irony, issues of financing to political parties are left out later in the supposedly updated corruption bill. So in opposition, you know, you get up all this licks and firestone, you come into government, despite issues that you found offensive and you thought, you know, why are you not addressing these things, are now absent from the new corruption anti-corruption legislation that you're trying to lay down.
We should not be here.
Exactly. And it's worrying that we're going through these cycles, because this is affecting our political development, it affects the economic development. And I think Crystal hit something really, really important there, that it affects meritocracy. It affects the ability of qualified and good people to be in the right position to take the country forward. So what you have, you end up creating, this is what I like to call it, you end up creating a system of people that fail upwards.
Okay, well, thank you. We're going to have to take a little break here. Today's program is brought to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated.
Williams Metals, choose us for your building needs at Williams Metals. We got what you need. We are the leaders in building materials. We offer lumber, cement, concrete, copper, aluminium, and all type of metals. For construction, get galvanized sheets, welding and plumbing products for sure. You can find that and so much more. Friendly staff to help with your search at King Gardens, St. Thomas, and Lowlands Christ Church. Williams Metals, we got what you need.
Good morning. This is Brass Tax Sunday. I am Christina Hines. Today, our producer is Mr. Dennis Johnson, and we have been engaging in a very fruitful conversation about corruption and integrity mechanisms. And at this point, I did mention that I had a specific question for Crystal Howell. And you are an auditor. People may wonder, what on earth does an auditor have to do with this whole corruption business, integrity, you know, accountants? They are the people that really are like helping with some of the graft and thing, right? Avoidance of creative tax practices and what have you. What would an auditor have to do with this? And this brings me to, I remember a few years ago, I watched a video that you posted after the Auditor General's report, and it was very amusing, but still serious, right? Where you indicated that this must be the most frustrated person in Barbados. When we are talking about integrity mechanisms, are there other mechanisms outside of having specific legislation dealing with corruption that can show us that perhaps there are some things happening that indicate corruption, such as, for instance, what you spoke about a few years ago, the Auditor General's report? What do these kinds of reports tell us about what is happening in the government? Do they indicate corruption, or do they just tell us about maladministration?
Well, thanks for that question. And to those who don't know, I can be quite a clown when I'm ready, but I do take the profession very seriously. And the role of the auditor is one that I think now BAMP is probably the next closest to understanding how frustrating it is when you're giving your professional advice and opinion, and you want to have the highest standard, but because of realities, persons are trying to meet in the middle. But the thing about having these reports and what they say and what they indicate, the reality is when you have issues of this magnitude that are highlighted in these reports, it's indicative of either incompetence or corruption. That's the reality. So either someone is not competent enough to do the job and things are slipping and wastage is occurring, or these are deliberate acts where persons are ignoring areas of significance. And I'm not talking about, because once it's in the Auditor General's report, it's going to be something of significance. People can make mistakes, there can be errors. But when the errors are of this magnitude, something is wrong. And the problem we have had for many, I would say decades now, is that the accountability just is not there, or there's a lot of window dressing when it comes to accountability, because we rarely, if ever, hear about someone being disciplined. Most of the time we hear about persons being shifted around. But what real consequence comes of persons who have displayed this level of incompetence or have engaged in corrupt practices? We have a public accounts committee where there is a lot of fluster and discussion initially, but even when the discussions are concluded, what is the real consequence for the persons who would have engaged in these practices? And even the most recent one with the Barbados Transport Board, what was the consequence that came out of that investigation? There, and I know a lot of the times people get very scared when you hear professionals talking about corruption and signs of corruption, but saying that there are signs of corruption does not mean that you have proof. It just means that there are signs, and these red flags were tremendous with that case, yet we did not hear of any consequences that came out of that. And when I speak to consequences, I don't just mean in terms of disciplinary action, but what practices were changed to make sure that these things cannot happen again. Because whether it was out of malice or out of pure incompetence, the fact of the matter is that it was able to happen. And unless we change what is going on, it will continue to happen. And not just now for the Transport Board, but for other areas of government where persons recognize, well, wait, if they were able to get away with that, maybe I can try it and see if it can get away too, because we've now expanded the opportunities and the awareness for persons to realize that there are loopholes in the system. So because it's so difficult to explore and examine every single aspect of government, we do not know now how many other persons are doing these things and getting away with it, because the consequences are poor and the call to action to address these loopholes is very slow.
So what you're saying, so when we're talking about the Auditor General's report, what this will show us is sometimes where money is missing or unaccounted for.
Yes.
And you're saying to us that we are not certain whether this money is missing or unaccounted for because of poor administration or incompetence, or somebody has stolen the money or misappropriated the funds.
Correct.
Right. And, so there are some other things that can show us where there is potential corruption. And as you're saying, there are mechanisms that we can put in place to have better processes to guard against such actions.
Yes, right? Because part of being specifically an internal auditor, because there are many types of auditors and persons usually just assume we're all one and the same, but they're actually persons who are trained in fraud investigations so that they can recognize these signs and put things in place to help minimize, because it's always going to be difficult to eliminate. But this is why the laws need to be very strict and stringent, so that there are fewer persons who can slip through the cracks in terms of getting away with these corrupt practices. That's why we're very dependent on the legal minds to make sure that these loopholes, as many of them as possible, are closed. Because even with the best legislation in place, people still find ways around it. So if your legislation has weak, blatant loopholes that persons can easily step through, it makes our job in terms of being able to correct these things that much more difficult. And I must also emphasize, it also frustrates the process when we give our reports and we hand off to the persons who are supposed to enforce this, whether it is the police force or any other enforcement agency, and they are so overwhelmed by the responsibilities that they have or their ability to enforce, especially when it comes to higher ups. And let's be realistic in Barbados. When it comes to persons of wealth, privilege, or means, it is much more difficult to carry out enforcement. And the reality is many of the persons who perpetrate fraud or corruption at this level tend to be persons who have the means to be able to pay more bribes to try to get out of it. And it creates a very difficult cycle of trying to report on these matters, have some kind of accountability or discipline enforced, but the very nature of that process is frustrated because persons have become so entrenched in just paying their way out of trouble.